Morning. Today's daf and sota is Mem Hey. We are in the very bottom of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. We are going to be starting today from the Mishnah. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is one of the Chanukah Lib Gabriela Bashmuel. The Mishnayos are describing the speech going out to war. Meshuch Mechabah, the Kohen that's appointed as being the basically the chief rabbi of the army. So it's an appointed position. So he is going to speak to the army as they approach battle. The Mishnah previously described there are two occasions where he's going to speak to them, once by the Sfar, once by the border, as they're exiting Eretz Yisrael, and the second time they're going to be speaking at the battlefield. They are basically encouraging the soldiers to have courage. And the Mishnah, the previous Mishnah, gave a more detailed illustration of what exactly the Kohen would be saying, and also anyone who has an exemption, who has a patur, is allowed to return. We spent all of yesterday talking about the Peturim, the various exemptions from going out to battle, or the various exemptions from being in battle, but being able to at least recede and leave the front line, but still be involved in the wartime effort. Then this mission over here is going to be continuing in the along the lines of the speeches that are given. If you take a look at the psukim, which we already analyzed at length, so the psukim are really broken up into three different components. We're in Parsha Shoftim Perichov. We started the very beginning of the parak. Yisaitz l'melchama. So once again, Pasuk Beis and Gimel and Dalet are going to be describing the Meshuch Mechama speech, right? The Pasuk Gimel, V'amar Alehem Shema Yisrael Atem Krevim Ayon L'Mechama Le'Vechem Al Yerach L'Vavchem Al Tiru V'Al Tach Bezu V'Al Tartzu Mipneihem. Don't be afraid, K'Yashem L'Kechem Olechem Lechem 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 Imay Vechem Lo Shiazchem. So that was section number one. We already described how the Gemara previously, and the Mishnah previously explained that the Hashem Elokechem Olech Lachem is a reference to the Aaron that goes out with us as well. Dabru Hashochim, this is now Pasuk Hey. I'm sorry, V'dibru Hashochim Ela'am Le'mor Ki Mi'ayish Asher Bana Bayis Chadash V'lo Chancho Yelech V'yashu L'Veisto Pen Yemos B'Mechama. And then Pasuk Vav and then Pasuk Zayin talks about the various Peturim, the three exemptions that we spent all of yesterday discussing. And then the last section, Pasuk Ches, the Asfu Hashoshim Ladaber La'am, the officers continue to speak or additionally speak, the Amra Miyaisha Ayare V'racha Levav, anyone who's afraid, Yelech V'yashov V'yaso is allowed to go home, or should go home, V'lo Yimasu Savav V'chav Kilvavo, and don't discourage the rest of the soldiers. Right. So with that in mind, we now continue with the Mishnah on Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, when towards the bottom of the Amud. The Asfu Hashoshim Ladaber La'am V'gomer Rabbi Kiva Amar Ayare V'racha Levav Kimashmo. Rabbi Akiva says, do you know what the person's afraid of? It's very simple, says Rabbi Akiva. He's afraid of war. In other words, anyone who knows that they're going to be afraid of war, or is afraid right now, so he's going to get up, he's going to go back, he's going to return back home. Rabbi Akiva says, you don't need to do anything more with the psukim can be understood on the very simplest level. Excuse me. Rabbi Yosef Glilu Amir, Hayarech Varacha Levav Zehu Hamiyare Min Ha'avero Shabiyado. Rabbi Yosef Glilu is of the opinion that no, fear over here does not mean fear of war. Fear over here means fear because you know you have Averos, and you're worried that your Averos are not going to carry you through the war. Lefichach Tatala Torah Kola Elush Yachzor Biglalam. And Rav Yosef Glili says, and the Torah orchestrated this masterfully, where what's going to now happen is that a number of people are going to go back for legitimate reasons. Meaning the Kohen just read to them all the exemptions that allows a person to go back. And so now you're in the battlefield, you have Averos, you at this point in time don't want to return on your own because you're basically announcing to everyone, hi, I have Averos, and I'm going back because of my Averos. So what's going to happen now is that you have all these people who are legitimately going back because they fall under these exemptions, so you're going to go back together with them. Now, people don't know that you don't have a real exemption. You're just simply afraid because of your averos. Rabbi Yosef Galili says, perfect. That's exactly what the Torah was driving at, that everybody would go out to the battlefield, then the exemptions would be read out, then the exempted people would go back, and you, the Baal Avera, can also go back as well, and you won't have to suffer the embarrassment. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Amanu l'Kohen Gadol, Grusha v'Chalutz l'Kohen Hedjov, Mamzer Sinsin l'Yisrael, Ba'as Yisrael l'Mamzer l'Nesin, Hare Ehu Hayarech v'Rav Halevav. Rabbi Yossi, is of the opinion now, just to make a clear distinction. The previously was Rabbi Yossi Aglili, this is Rabbi Yossi. And the Gemara later on is going to ask the question, their position sounds similar, and we're going to come back to that question a little bit later on. But in the meantime, Rabbi Yossi's position is, if let's say you're Kohen married to a Grusha, okay, you're in a illegitimate marriage. Again, it's marriage because it's only a lav, and a lav, there's tefisas kedushin by a lav, but you are in an illicit marriage. So so Rav Yossi says you should go back. Parenthetically, by the way, it sounds pretty clear that Kohanim would be out in the going out to war. Otherwise, okay. So it sounds that way from the Mishnah. Fine. And so Rav Yossi Shita seems to complement Rav Yossi Galili Shita. In fact, the Gemara later on will ask, what are we doing, seemingly repeating the same position? Continuing in the Mishnah. Now, after all the exempted people and the scared people would go leave the battlefield, so now you would have appointed soldiers. Officers, some in the front and some in the back. Ma'amidim is the kevul of nevim v'achareim. So, being placed both in the front and the back. Me'achareim mukshelim shal barzal biyadeim. I'm sorry, lifnei v'achareim. Me'achareim mukshelim shal barzal biyadeim. So, and the ones in the back, so they would have some sort of iron. Whips, I guess. Now, let's say now in the middle of battle, so somebody at this point in time would like to turn around and retreat, so the officers in the back would make sure that they don't turn around and they don't retreat, and in fact they are even authorized to, if necessary, basically break his ankles if he decides that he wants to retreat at that point in time. Now the Gemara later on is going to work a little bit on the Lashon of the Mishnah, but basically because once you have some soldiers retreating, so then that's going to demoralize the entire army, and basically it'll be the beginning of a loss. So therefore, in order to make sure that nobody allows the fear to get the best of them, so they're going to have officers in the back of the battlefield who are going to make sure that everyone stays in the information. Shenemar Nasi Sol Lefnei Plishim VeGam Magifa Gedola Haisa Ba'am. Gemara just cites an example where we find that once we start retreating, once we start fleeing, so then there was a magifa. Once people start retreating, so then even more people die. The Gemara says, now when is all this true? That is only true as it relates to a Mechemes HaRashus. A Mechemes HaRashus literally means a war that was permitted. But in this context, it means that we're talking about annexation. We're not talking about the defense of the Jewish of the Jewish state and the Jewish people, but we're talking about annexation. But as it relates to a Mechema of a Mitzvah, so Mechemes Mitzvah meaning the conquering of Eretz Yisrael during Yehoshua, or the defense of Eretz Yisrael proper. So under those circumstances, Hakol Yotzin, everybody would go out to war. Afilo Chatam Mechajov Kala Mechupaso, even the Chasan, even the Kala. That's true as it relates to Mechamas Mitzvah. But if it's a Mechama of an obligation, the Shita Rav Yehuda seems to be almost identical to the Shita of the Tanakhama. The words that he uses are a little different. He's using words like Chova and Mitzvah as opposed to Mitzvah versus Rishus. So stay tuned because the Gemara is also going to try to deal with what the difference is between Rav Yehuda and the Tanakhama. Okay, the Gemara starts off the discussion. My Ika bin Rav Yossi l'Rav Yossi Aglili. Okay, now recall in our Mishnah there are two ways to understand the last section of the speech. Kol arach rach levav. Anyone who's soft in the heart, meaning anyone who's afraid, may turn around and go back home. So what does that mean? So Rabbi Kiva in the Mishnah says it means you're afraid of battle. Right? In other words, you know that you don't have the constitution to fight in war. So then at that point in time, it is best at this point in time that you go back home. That's Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Yosef Aglili in the Mishnah says, no. Racha Levav means that you're fine with the battle. What you're afraid of is that you are Balaveros. And so therefore, you are at this point in time encouraged to go back home because your Averos are not going to carry you through. And then in the Mishnah, we have the opinion of Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef says, if let's say, for example, you're a Kohen and you're married to a Grusha, you should go back home. Which is the position of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And the Gemara's question is, what's the difference between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yossi Aglili? Ika Benai, the Gemara points out, there is a difference, Avera de Rabbanan. The difference between them is going to be in Avera de Rabbanan. According to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, even if you violated a Suri de Rabbanan, you must go back. According to Rabbi Yossi, it is not until you violate Nisar Torah, like an Almana to a Kohen Gadol, or like a Grusha to a Kohen Hedjo. The question which always stands out when the Gemara makes this kind of distinction is that one of the cases in the Mishnah, if you look back at the Mishnah, is Amana Kohen Gadol Grusha v'chalutza l'Kohen Hedjo. A Kohen marrying a Chalutza. A Kohen marrying a Chalutza is not Nisra D'Raisa. A Kohen marrying a Chalutza is Nisra D'Rabbanan. So the Gemara made a very basic distinction between Rav Yossi Aglili and Rav Yossi, where the Gemara just said that according to Rav Yossi, you must violate Nisra D'Raisa. But meanwhile, one of the examples of Rav Yossi is a Kohen to a Chalutza, which is not Nisra D'Raisa, Nisra D'Rabbanan. That question almost always presents itself, so the Gemara doesn't deal with it, but it's something to be aware of. I don't have right now the best answer, but it's just something to always be aware of. Back to the Gemara, we're on Memdalam and Beis, about 10 lines down. We learned on the Braisa, Sach bein tefila letefila, Averu biyadu v'choz ola me'orchei ha-melchama. If let's say you're putting on your tefillin, there's two tefillin, tefillin shal yad, tefillin shal rosh. And we first put on the shal yad, and then we put on the shal rosh. And we make brachas when we put them on. If you are a Sfard, you make one bracha. If you're Ashkenaz, you make two brachas. It's a machlokas, Rishonim already, how many brachas to make. In the meantime, however, you cannot talk between putting on your tefillin shel yad and your tefillin shel rosh. And, oh, by the way, there's another basic halacha, which you shouldn't talk even while they're on. But that's a different issue. But you cannot talk between them going on. And the Braisa records that if you talk between putting on your tefillin shel yad, tefillin shel rosh, so that serves as enough of an avera where you should turn around and you should consider yourself to be one of the rach levav. So the Gemara says, "Kaman k'Rav Yossi Aglili." So the Gemara says that goes like the opinion of Rav Yossi Aglili, meaning is that an issur d'oraisa? Gemara assumes no, it's not an issur d'oraisa. And meanwhile, the Braisa says you got to go back. So the Gemara says it's going like Rav Yossi Aglili. Mantan lahad the Tana Rabbanan Shama called Karanas Virtia Hagafas Tracing Virtia Tachzo Charavos Amayim Shosim Lo Al Birkav. So the Braisa says that if you hear the horns and you start shuddering and the shields banging against one another and you start shaking and the swords and water's running down your legs, you're losing control of your of your bodily functions. Choser. So at that point in time, you need to go back. Kaman lema k'Rabbi Akiva, evil Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Now, the simple way to read that braisa is go like Rabbi Akiva, meaning you're afraid, and therefore you should go back. So the Gemara says, Afila Rabbi Yossi Aglili, modu mishum dechsiv, lo yimasa zavav achav bilvavo. I'm sorry, kilavavo. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Rabbi Yossi Aglili would also be in agreement. Meaning, if you know right now that you're not going to be a good soldier, and you know that basically all you're going to be doing in the battle field is looking to retreat and looking to run away, and so even according to Rav Yossi Aglili, it's not good for you to go out there, meaning aside from the fact that you're not going to be useful, but worse than that is that you're also going to cause fear amongst the other soldiers. Rav Yossi Aglili would also agree he should go back, he shouldn't fight. As I mentioned when we read the Mishnah, the Gemara right now is just tweaking a little bit the language of the Mishnah. The Mishnah's point is that once you start retreating, that's the beginning of a loss. The Mishnah says Tchilas Nisa Tchilas Nisa Nefila. The beginning of fleeing is falling. So it's the other way around. And the Gemara is just now going to just tweak the language. So the Gemara says, all right, tweak it. The beginning of a loss is running away. The retreat, the running away, that really is going to represent the beginning of a loss. So, the Rav Yehuda mitzvah, the Rabbanan Zui Chova. Zui Chova, the Rav Yehuda. So, Rav Yochanan is just simply going to create an alignment between the language that's used by the Tanakhama versus the language that's used by Rav Yehuda. The Tanakhama makes a distinction between mitzvah versus rishus. Rav Yehuda makes a distinction between mitzvah versus chova. So what Rav Yochanan is just doing is explaining to us how to understand how this terminology relates to one another. So the rishus employed by the Chachamim, by the Tanakhama or Mishnah, is the same language as the term mitzvah by Rav Yehuda. And the term mitzvah used by the Tanakhama is what the Rav Yehuda refers to as chova. Which, let's put it in other terms, they really agree. They're just using different terms in order to describe what's the mitzvah versus what is a... what's the rishos? And now the Gemara is going to explain. Now that we have the basic understanding of terminology of both the Tanakhama versus Rav Yehuda, so why is it important that one calls it mitzvah versus rishos, and the other calls it chova versus mitzvah? So the Gemara goes on to explain. So mechamis Yoshua lechbosh divra kol chova. Look, here's where we all can agree. Yoshua comes in to conquer Eretz Yisrael. That's an obligation. That's chova. And everyone's of the opinion, that's chasan michupaso, chasan mechedro v'kal michupaso. Then you take everybody for the wartime effort. You take the men, you take the women, everybody gets involved in wartime effort. And you, divra kol chova. Milcham is based David l'ravacha, divra kol rishos. And when David's fighting a war for the purposes of annexation, so then we can all agree that that's rishos. Meaning that's strictly optional. That's now where you get soldiers, but read them. You pick them out, and you weed through those who are brave, those who are not brave. In other words, then you go through the whole process that we just described in our Mishnah, and we can all agree that that's a rishus. Ki pligi lamute ovde kochavim delolaisi alayhu. So the Gemara says, where, however, is the point of distinction, demarcation between the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda, is where it is that we have to just minimize the number of Ovdei Kochavim that are living in the land. So Mar Karilei Mitzvah, Mar Karilei Rishus. So so that's just a question of what terminology now are we going to be using to describe it. Is that going to be used as a mitzvah, or is that going to be used as a rishus? The Gemara says, now that we know that they're arguing about terminology, what difference does it make? So the Gemara says, Amay nafkamina, la'osek b'mitzvah shepatim in a mitzvah. Meaning, is if it falls under the category of mitzvah, so then we have all the rules of a mitzvah. For example, the Gemara gives an example of osek b'mitzvah, patim in a mitzvah. So now you're being involved in a mitzvah. So we know the general rule is once you're involved in the mitzvah, you're exempt from doing other mitzvahs. However, if it's just rishus, if it falls under the category of it's a war and we have to fight it, but status wise it's an optional war, it's not an obligatory war, it's not a mitzvah, so then we don't have principles like osik b'mitzvah patam b'mitzvah. Okay, that is the end of the 8th parak of the Masechta, and let's just jump right into the 9th parak of the Masechta. Here we begin. This 9th parak of the Masechta deals with the mitzvah of Egla Arufa. Okay, in the Chumash, I have the Chumash open, so we're pretty much staying in the spot. Okay, these last parakim of Sota are good in that they localize themselves to one area in the Chumash, and we just finished the 6th Aliyah of Parsha Shoftim, and we start now with the 7th Aliyah of Parsha Shoftim. And the final Aliyah of Parsha Shoftim continues with a description of going into war, making an overture for peace, going and making a siege around a city, not cutting the fruit trees, okay, Bal Tashchis. And then finally, the last section of Parsha Shoftim deals with finding a corpse on the ground. And what do we do if we find a corpse on the ground? And I forgot where I heard this from, but it's I've heard this many times from many different sources. So forgive me for not giving proper credit. But what is this parsha doing in the middle of war? So basically, the Torah wants to contrast that even though war, we kind of devalue life during war. It's just the nature of war. But at the same time, we should also have a sensitivity towards life. And so, stuck in the middle of all this discussion of war, because by the way, the discussion of war continues into the next parsha as well. The beginning of the next parsha is Kiseis Lamelchama Leivecha, and Eishes Yifas Tovar. So the section in the Torah of war really didn't come to a conclusion at the end of Parsha Shoftim. It goes a little bit into Parsha's Kiseitse. And then in the middle of all that, what if you find a corpse anywhere on the land? So we go through this whole procedure, which I'm sure you're already familiar with, but we go through this whole procedure, and just the contrast of war, life becomes devalued, and at the same time, let's make sure that we don't lose the value of a life, even somebody who's dead already, meaning, but still. But there could have been more that we did to prevent that death. Let's think about it. Let's consider it. And so that's what the Parsha of Eglah Arufa is doing amidst the entire discussion of war in the Torah. Okay. Again, it's I've heard that many times. I don't know who to properly credit that to. Let's start the Mishnah Eglah Arufa. Now, again, I'm assuming everyone here knows the basic procedure of Eglah Arufa. Okay, as we get through the Mishnah, you'll become more familiar with it, and go through the Parsha. I'm not going to go through the Parsha right now. I see where we are in terms of time. I see where we are in terms of how far behind we are. So let's just go right into the Mishnah. Eglah Arufa B'Lashon HaKodesh. Now, why does it come up over here? So again, credit goes back to Daf Lamed Beis, which now is a long time ago. Daf Lamed Beis gave us a list of those things that can be said B'Chol Lashon, and those things that exclusively have to be said B'Lashon HaKodesh. That which the Zakenim say during the procedure of the Eglah Arufa must be said B'Lashon HaKodesh. Shenemar ki matzeh chala ba'adama v'yatsu zakenech v'shoftecha. And then the Gemara quotes a pasuk. Now the Gemara later on is going to explain that the pasuk that was just quoted has nothing to do with the requirement of saying B'Lashon HaKodesh. So the Gemara later on is going to ask the question, where did you see in those words that were quoted in the Mishnah that it must be said B'Lashon HaKodesh? So stay tuned. The Gemara is going to ask and answer that question. So, now, interesting, you find a corpse on the ground, it is unidentified, we don't know who the corpse is, and obviously we don't know who the killer is, and we assume there's a killer. We have enough circumstantial evidence that there was in fact a killer, and so now we're going to go through a procedure. But before we go through the procedure, so we need Zakenim to be there. The Torah instructs us that there be Zakenim. In fact, we just look back at the Mishnah one line earlier, and you see that the Torah's instructions are Zakenecha v'shoftecha. You need Zakenim and you need Shoftim. So what does that mean? Shlosha mi beis din agadol shebirushalayim hayoyotzim. So according to the Tanakhama, so that means that you would get representation from the Sanhedrin, from the beis din agadol in Yerushalayim. According to the Tanakhama, three of them would come down to wherever we are in Eretz Yisrael, to where this corpse is, and so you would have a three Sanhedrin representation of the Sanhedrin Agadol in Yerushalayim, being there present during the procedure of the Eglah Arufa. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Chamisha, and Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says, no, not three, but rather five. Shenema, the pasuk says, Zekenecha Shnaim, V'shoftecha Shnaim, because we have the word Zekenecha, which again, plural, and we always work with a minimalist approach. So the minimalist of plural is the number two. So Zekenecha is two, Shoftecha is another two, Vein based in Shakal. Now you know, 2 + 2 = 4, but in Sanhedrin math, 2 + 2 does not equal 4, and Sanhedrin math, 2 + 2 = 5, because you cannot stop an even number, so therefore you have to add another number, and so therefore that totals the number 5. Mosif and Aleim, Od Echad. So Rabbi Yehuda says that you get to the number 5. What's the Tanakhama going to do with the extra words of Zekenecha v'Shoftecha? Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to ask that question, and the Gemara will respond. Now, if the body was found either buried under rubble, or hanging from a tree, or floating on the water, lo hayu orphan, we would not go through the procedure of the Eglah Arufa. And the Mishnah presents the drashas that teach us these three halachas. The Torah says that you find the corpse ba'adama, on the ground, meaning on top of the ground, not buried under rubble. No fell, it fell. Velo salu be'ila, not hanging on a tree, and basadeh in the field. Velo tzaf al pnei hamayim, not floating in the water. So under these circumstances, we don't go through the procedure of the Eglah Arufa. Nimsa Samach La Separ. Let's say you find it next to the border. We just described the word Separ in the previous parak. Separ in this context means the border. If you find the body next to the border between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, or it's proximate to a city that most of the inhabitants are non-Jews, or let's say it's proximate to a city that does not have a Beis Din, kind of like a lawless town. Lo hayu orphan, once again, we would not go through the procedure of the Egla Arufa, and later we're going to discuss how we arrived at that conclusion. How do we know that? Ein modedin ela le'ir she'esh ba Beis Din. And in terms of the act of measuring, which is a big component of the whole procedure of the Egla Arufa, in terms of determining proximity, so you would only measure to a city that had a Beis Din. If a city did not have a Beis Din, you would not measure towards that city. Once again, it's a lawless town, city without a Beis Din, and so that city does not get reckoned in the whole measuring procedure. Just before we start with the Gemara, just a comment. The Rambam writes, the Rambam always looks for Tamei Mitzvah. He looks for reasons behind the Mitzvah. What the Rambam says, that part of the reason why we go through the whole procedure of the Egla Arufa is to create more of a commotion of there's a corpse and we're looking for the assailant, and if anybody knows any information, like, now's the time to come forward. So basically, it's a means of trying to smoke out the perpetrator. That's in his Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam says one of the Tamei HaMitzvah that's behind the whole procedure of Egla Arufa. Start with the Gemara, my Kama. The Gemara starts off by questioning the Mishnah's first point. The Mishnah says it has to be B'lashon HaKodesh. Then the Mishnah quoted a Pasuk, but the Pasuk being quoted has nothing to do with the idea of B'lashon HaKodesh. So my Kama, Rabbi Abba, Achi Kama, Shenema, Vanu, Vamru. Oh, so what we need to do is we need to fill in the gap. Meaning that the Mishnah quoted the Pasuk, but assuming that we knew the Pasuk, or Pesukim, so the Mishnah kind of just went ahead forward, but meanwhile the Gemara says, here's where it comes from. Vanuva Amru, this is the line said by the Zakenim, as they go through that which they need to say. It's Pasuk Zayin. It's this Perek Chafalef. Is the Parsha is where the Parsha of Egla Ruf is found. It's the end of Parsha Shoftim. So Pasuk Zayin. Va'anu v'amru yadinu lo shafcha or lo shafchu es adam hazeh ve'inenu lo ra'u. Okay, we'll get back to the Pesukim later on. Anyway, it's va'anu v'amru lahalanu omer va'anu alevi v'amru. And we have also by the Har Grizna v'Har Eval. That becomes like the basis for many of these halachas, and ma'aniyah hamor la'alam la'shan kodesh, just like by the Levim, by Har Grizim and Har Eval, it's B'lashon HaKodesh, Avkan B'lashon HaKodesh, so too over here it's B'lashon HaKodesh. The Gemara over here leaves out that next step. How do we know Har Grizim and Har Eval is B'lashon HaKodesh? Okay, we've already said it a number of times, but good. Seder Egla Arufa Ketzad, and now what the Gemara is just going to do is just explain to us where's the Mishnah headed to. Meaning, after establishing, again, the Mishnah didn't say this, but it's all encrypted in the Mishnah. After going through, how do we know that the Zakenim must speak B'lashon HaKodesh? Next is, what is the procedure? Ketzad. And that now brings in the next part of the Mishnah, which is, first, a representation from the Sanhedrin HaGadol, how many, Machlokes, Tanakam, Rav Yehuda, etc., etc., etc. Okay. Rav Yehuda Omer Chamisha. Now the Gemara is going to focus on the Machlokes between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda, how many representatives from the Sanhedrin are going to descend to the scene of the crime and be there. So the Tanakam says 3, and Rabbi Yehuda says 5, and let's now understand the Machlokas a little bit better. Tanar Rabbanu v'yatsu zekenecha v'shoftecha zekenecha shneim v'shoftecha shneim v'ein beis din shokol mosif aleim od echad harei kan chamisha div Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara quotes a Braisa, and the Braisa first introduces us to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. See, out of order from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah went Tanakama, then Rabbi Yehuda. The Braisa goes first Rabbi Yehuda, and now with Tanakama. Although, of course, it's not the Tanakama. Here in this Braisa, he's going to be identified. Rabbi Shimon Amar, Zekenecha Shanaim, Vein based in Shakel, Mosif and Lem, Orachan, Arikan, Shlosha. So it's a machlok, it's between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. So our Mishnah, who has a Tanakama, now at least we know enough to say that the Tanakama of our Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon. Okay, Okay, good. Adkan. So now after presenting both opinions, you know what the Gemara is going to do? It's classic. The Gemara is going to go over the sources for each position, and what does the other Tana do with the other Tana sources? And back and forth. Rabbi Shimon Nami Haksi v'shoftecha, ha'umi v'ayelei l'miyuchadim shibashoftecha. So what is Rabbi Shimon going to do with the fact that the Torah says v'shoftecha? He understands shoftecha telling us it does not mean extra shoftim. It is an adjective describing the type of shoftim you're going to be getting. Miyuchadim. You get the most special of the Sanhedrin. Right? There is some sort of pecking order in terms of the Sanhedrin, even the Sanhedrin Agadol. Right? Even within the Supreme Court of Klal Yisrael, there's still some semblance of he's above him, he's above him. Okay, how do they arrive at these conclusions? I don't know. But in other words, but there is a chain of command. So when you send the representation from the Sanhedrin down to the scene of the crime, you make sure to get miyuchadim, not just any three, but special three. Rav Yehuda Mizikne Zikanecha Nafka. Now Rav Yehuda also arrives at the same conclusion, but he learns it from the additional language. The Torah could have said the word Zikne. The Torah then adds an extra letter, Zikenecha, your Zikenim. So from there, Rabbi Yehuda derives that it's got to be special representatives. Rabbi Shimon Ikaz Rachman Zikne. Now Rabbi Shimon just simply says, no, the Torah could not have gotten away with writing the word Zikne. Because Because if the Torah would have just simply said Zikne, it just means you're elders. So you know what? Go to Shul, get three elderly people, and they'll qualify, right? So Kaz of Rachman Zikenecha. So Zikenecha is telling me that not just three elderly people, but Zikenecha, your Zikenim, meaning the ones that are in the Sanhedrin. Vikas Rechman Zikenecha Ahava Amina Filas Sanhedrin Kitana. So now, if it would have said Zikenecha, so then at least I know it, that they're members of Sanhedrin, but which Sanhedrin? Not the Sanhedrin Agadol, but any major court. Right, when we get to Sanhedrin, so we're going to learn together. It's a while down the road, but we're going to learn together that that a Sanhedrin of 23 is enough of a Sanhedrin to try a capital case. So could it be that the Zikei Nechem refers to just simply a member of a smaller court, but smaller meaning, but it's still a capital crimes court. So Kazar Rechman v'shoftecha lemiuchadim shebeshoftecha, and that's why the Torah has to say the word v'shoftecha. Telling me that it's not just any one of the courts, but it's the high court. So, Rav Yehuda Nami Zikne, 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 I'm sorry. I was right. Second to last line on Memdal Mud Beis. Rav Yehuda Gamar Zikne, Zikne. Now, Rabbi Yehuda already arrives at that point because we're going to learn Gzeira Shava. In Parshas Vayikra, going back in the Chumash, so at the end of Parshas Vayikra, so there are special carbon chattises that are enumerated at the end of the Parsha. One of them is Par Helam Davar Shal Tzibor, where if the Sanhedrin comes out with an erroneous ruling and the Jewish people follow the erroneous ruling, so then it is incumbent on the Beis Din to bring a special carbon. It's carbon as a carbon. I'm sorry, Par Helam Davar, Shel Eda. So there, obviously, we're only talking about a ruling of the Sanhedrin Agadol. So, Rabbi Yehuda says, that's how I know that we're talking about the Sanhedrin Agadol and not just any Sanhedrin. So, Igam Ola Gemara Lekula Milsa Mihasam. So the Gemara says, well, if it's Gzera Shava, linking together the Zikanim of of the Egla Arufa to the Zikanim of the Par Helam Davar, so why not learn everything from over there? Now, as Rashi points out, the first parak in the Gemara Sanhedrin is going to teach us, or has taught us, whichever side of Daf Yomi you want to look at, has taught us that there are going to be representation of the Sanhedrin who are going to be present by the Karbon. How many of them are going to be there? Five. So, once you have a Gzeira Shava that opens up the two parshios together, so then you already have all the answers. Meaning it's the Sanhedrin Agadol, it's going to be five, and so why do you go through the trouble of Zekeinechas two and Shoftechas two, and then add another one because it can't be an even number? The Gzeirah Shevah Tisha teaches everything. So finally the Gemara concedes that point. So Ela Vav Vishoftecha Liminyano. So the Gemara then abandons the Gzeirah Shavah. We're going to stay in the Parsha of Egla Rufa. How do I know that the number is five according to Rabbi Yehuda? I know the number is five because it says Vishoftecha. Shoftecha means two. The Vav is an addition, an additional two that gets us to four. It can't be even, that gets us to five. And the Zekeinecha is there to tell us which Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin Agadol. V'Rabbi Shimon Vav Lomashma Lei. And just to conclude this one thread of Gemara, what about Rabbi Shimon? Rabbi Shimon does not darshan the additional Vav, and that's... sorry. And that's why according to Rabbi Shimon... That's why according to Rabbi Shimon, it leaves it at just three. Shoftecha tells us two. Can't be an even number. It's going to be the number three. Okay. I'm going to breathe for just a moment. We're now on the top of Mem Hei Amud Aleph, and we continue. Okay, we got to today's daf. That's wonderful. Okay, let's... these dafim are long. I miss Tosfos. Bring him back. Okay, we now are going to continue in the Gemara on daf Mem Hei Amud Aleph. So again, what we've been discussing is the mitzvah of Egla Rufa. You need representation from the Sanhedrin Agadol. How many do you need? Machlokus between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda and our Mishnah. The Tanakama is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon, Tanakama says you need three. Rabbi Yehuda says you need five. The Gemara just went through the give and take of the machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in terms of how to darshan the Pesukim. Ela Miata, skip the parentheses. Ela Miata on the top of Mem Hei Amud Aleph. Aviyatu Shnaim Umad Dedu Shnaim L'Rav Yehuda Hare Kantisha. Every time there's a new description of those Zekeinim. So do you mean that according to Rav Yehuda you're going to add another two? So for example, Viyatsu and they're going to go out. That should be another two, right? Umad Dedu and they're going to measure. That should be another two. So how many do we have right now? We have Vishoftecha, 2 plus 2. Then Viyatsu, another two. Then Umadadu, and then that's another two. So we are now at the number 8. And you know you can't stop at 8 because that's an even number. Keep going. So that's 9. So Hare Kantisha, that gets us to 9. And the Rabbi Shimon, Hare Kantisha, according to Rabbi Shimon, he's also not left out of this question. So according to Rabbi Shimon, that's 7. 2 plus 2 plus 2 plus another 1, that's 7. So the Gemara says no. Homi Baile Lechidatayin, the Gemara quotes a Braisa. Viyatsu hein velo shluchehen. Viyatsu simply means that they must go out and they cannot send an agent. A shlich based in over here is unacceptable. It must be the zekeinim themselves. Next, umadadu shafil nimsa ba'alil le'ir hayu modedin shem mitzvah lasok b'medida. Then the Gemara says that the medida, the umadadu, is coming to teach me that, let's say, it's obvious. We have a corpse. It's lying somewhere between two cities. And now we have to measure to see which city is closer. And now I look at the city that I'm sitting right next to, like we're right outside of one city, and the next city I could barely see. It's obvious. The halacha is, you measure. Even though you know what the conclusion is going to be, there's still a mitzvah b'medida, you still must measure. That's what the Madadu is coming to teach me. Mitzvah la'asok b'medida. In terms of the word alil, that should be a word that sounds familiar to you. You remember the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah? The Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah describes, let's say we're talking about the witnessing of the sighting of the new moon. Let's say there's not a cloud in the sky, and the new moon is evidence to everybody. It's nira ba'alil. It's clear. And then there was a discussion in the Mishnah over there in the Gemara as to whether or not everyone should still go to Yerushalayim in order to testify about the new moon, or can you assume, well, if I saw it, then somebody else saw it, and so let somebody else go. Okay, right? That was the Mishnah over there in Rosh Hashanah. So that using the same word of Alil. Anyway, our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov. How do I know that? Because Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov Omer, Zikeinecha zu Sanhedrin, Shoftecha zu Melech v'Kohen Gadol. Zikeinecha is a reference to the Sanhedrin, and the word Shoftecha is telling me that I need two other people to be there at the scene of the crime. The king himself of the Jewish people, and the Kohen Gadol, both need to be at the scene of the crime, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So first of all, how do I know that a king is connected with Shoftecha? Pasuk and Mishle, connecting a king and Shofet. And the Kohen also is connected with the word Shofet. So Shoftecha is a reference to Melech and Kohen Gadol. Ibailu Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and Melech and Kohen Gadol who the Palag of Abbas and Edron Ikarab Yehudi Karabi Shimon. Now we know that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov introduces two more people to be there at the scene of the crime, King and Kohen Gadol. That I know. How does Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov feel about the Sanhedrin? Is his position regarding the Sanhedrin a representation of three or five? Take your pick. Meaning, he could be holding like Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. O Dilma b'Sanhedrin amipalag, or maybe he's also arguing regarding Sanhedrin as well. Ad ika kula Sanhedrin, where that means that according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, he requires the entire Sanhedrin to be there. Amar Rav Yosef Tashma. Rav Yosef says, I know the answer, at least I think I know the answer, based on a b'raisa. Matzan zaken mamre, abe pagi. Okay. Now, we know that the purpose of the Sanhedrin in the basin, in the Lishkas Agazis, right? Behind me is a picture of the Beis HaMikdash. So we know that in the, right, everyone, let's just flip this in your head upside down. Right, down is north. So in the northeast corner of the Azara, so there is a chamber, Lishkas Agazis. It's hewn stone, carved stone. So that's the chamber where the Sanhedrin sits. The Sanhedrin is going to be sitting in a semicircular fashion, kind of like a moon. Stay tuned. We're going to describe the configuration in just a moment. And that is the place for the Sanhedrin to sit. The Sanhedrin would be there all the time. Their purpose is adjudication, right? When any case becomes too great for... for any of the smaller courts, but also their purpose is, right, the Lahavdil, but much like the Supreme Court here in this country, is to interpret. In other words, they are the ultimate interpreters of the Torah, right, the Torah Shabbat Peh, and if it comes down to what the halacha should be, and a question of halacha arises, and the question goes all the way up to the base in the Gadol of the Sanhedrin, so they're going to be the ones deciding what the halacha is. Excuse me. After they issued a ruling from the Lishkas Agazis, anyone then who rebels against that ruling and goes back home and publicly rules against that which was ruled by the Sanhedrin in the Lishkas Agazis is now labeled as the status of a Zakein Mamre, a rebellious sage, and he's put to death. Okay, for
a member of the Sanhedrin, right? Zakein Mamre is a member of Sanhedrin. It's not just any Jewish Shmo who's going to walk up.
I don't remember. The Gemara in Horios discusses it at length, and I'm going to plead an unfortunate act of forgetting on my part. I don't remember. It could be right. The Gemara over here is going to quote a braisa revolving the Zakein Mamre. What Rav Yosef is going to do is, after going through this braisa, demonstrate that this braisa will show us, at least attempt to show us, what is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's feeling regarding the Egla Rufa and the requirement of the Sanhedrin to be there at the scene of the crime. Okay, so again, we're going to be doing this braisa, but really it's going to be reflective of a position of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov as it relates to Egla Rufa. Hopefully that was clear. Let's do the braisa inside. Tashma the Gemara quotes the braisa. Matzan zaken mamre abe pagi. Let's say the zaken mamre is found abe pagi. Abe pagi, Rashi just simply understands this to mean, is that it's within a perimeter of Yerushalayim. Right? Any perimeter within Yerushalayim, within a certain perimeter of Yerushalayim, is referred to as be pagi. Okay, you see Rashi for more on that point. Anyway, vehimra alehem. And now, so they're not issuing the ruling from the Lishkas Agazis, but rather, while the Sanhedrin is out on a Shpatzir, we'll explain why they're out and about, but while they're out on a Shpatzir, so question came to them, they ruled while out of the Lishkas Agazis, and then some Zakein went back home and ruled against the ruling of the Sanhedrin. Yachotam Rasam Amran. Now, I might have thought that this qualifies as a rebellion. First of all, it is a rebellion. But what we mean by this is, does this qualify as giving him the status of a Zaken Mamre, where this is now serving as a capital crime? So the Gemara says, it's not. It's not enough of a capital crime because the makom is going to be garib. Denafakama. Now, good, that's the point. Which means that you're only a Zaken Mamre when you rule against the Sanhedrin, but only after they issued a ruling from the Lishkas Hagazas. Ad Kan. That's the point the Bryson was making. Why is the Sanhedrin out on a spatzir? So that is what the Gemara now wants to investigate. So first of all, it can't be that it was just part of the Sanhedrin out and about, because that means then that it's not the full Sanhedrin arriving at a conclusion. And even though this representation of Sanhedrin rules one way, you never know what the rest of the Sanhedrin who are sitting in the Lishkas Hagazas, what they feel. So you can't be called the Zaken Mamre only when you are going against the entire Sanhedrin. El Pshita Denafakulo. So it must be that the entire Sanhedrin is out and about. Ulamai. Iladvar Rishus Mimatanavke. Now, are they taking a Shpatir like I described earlier? Impossible. There's no room and allowance for a spatzir of the Sanhedrin. Vaksiv, Shirarecha again Hasar al Yechzer Hamezek. So she imitzrach echemem. Let's say sim yesham esrim v'shoshah keneged Sanhedrin katana yotzei v'im lav and yotzei. We know that the beauty, the right, the pasuk in Shir Hashirim obviously over here is not to be understood b'derech mashal. The beauty of the Jewish people is only when you have that half crescent moon in its proper location, meaning that there always needs to be at least 23 of the members of the Sanhedrin situated in the Lishkas Hagazas. Otherwise, the Jewish people are not at its point of beauty. El pshita l'dvar mitzvah. So, by allowance, we don't allow the Sanhedrin to leave the Lishkas Hagazas. It must be, it's not an allowance, it must be an obligation. They are obligated to leave the Sanhedrin. So, lamai. Lav lemedina segla. So it must be that they're leaving because they're on their en route to measure. So after having put all that information together, so now we're only left to assume that the entire Sanhedrin left the Lishkas Hagazas to leave to somewhere in the perimeter of Jerusalem in order to measure, which only leaves us to wonder, all of them are going out. Rabbi Yehuda says that three of them need to go out. Sorry.
Five.
Right. I mixed up the Shita. Rabbi Shimon says three of them need to go out. Rabbi Yehuda says five of them need to go out. Why do we have the entire Sanhedrin going out? So the Gemara finally concludes this is Rabbi Yossi's proof. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, it must be that the author of this brisa is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. After making all those assumptions. Amalei Abaye lo dil malo hosif ala yir vala zaros kid nan. Im hosif ala yir vala zaros ala bebezin shel shivim ve'achad. The Gemara says maybe not. Maybe the whole purpose of them going out was because of annexation. If you're going to annex a part of the Azara or a part of the city of Yerushalayim, you need the entire Sanhedrin to go out. Maybe that's why they all went out, and it's not for because of what you asserted. They're going out for the purpose of measurement. Let's just finish to the two dots. Tanya kavasi Rav Yosef matzan abeis pagi v'imra aleim kigon shiatsa lemedina segla olo osif ala yirva lazaros yachol teamra so amra tamalam revakamta valisa malame shamakim gareim. But then the Gemara quotes a brisa where this brisa clearly, like Rav Yosef's understanding of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, the entire Sanhedrin left the Lishkas Hagazas for purposes of either measurement or annexation of the city or annexation of an Azara. Under those circumstances, so if they issued a ruling while outside the Lishkas Hagazas and some Zaken went against them, so even though he's rebellious, he does not have the status of a Zaken Mamre, he will not be put to death. Clearly this brisa follows like Rav Yosef's earlier assumption that the entire Sanhedrin goes out for the purpose of measuring.